Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No! Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Good morning. This is Money Life for St. Patrick's Day, March the 17th. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm sorry that I missed the Ides of March and what have you, but I am back. I am rested. I am ready to go. I had a great time while I was away. And as you know, I'm going to be a proud father. I am anyway. But the last time I went away, I had a couple of emails from folks going, so how did the games go? Well, I went down this weekend to watch my daughter play two games for the Pfeiffer women's lacrosse team and spent some time with my daughter. My oldest daughter was actually on a break from her job, so she was down for part of my time. And she and I went to the first game on Friday night, and my youngest daughter, Whitney, scored one goal but got 10 assists, which broke the school record for assists in a game, which broke the conference record for assists in a game. And it's just the second highest total. There's someone else who got 10, and there's three players tied with more than 10 in a single game. They both got 12. But it's the second highest total in the history of women's Division II lacrosse. And yeah, it was pretty cool. If I had known all that other stuff, I would have been rooting for her to get even more. She had a great game. She actually could have gotten more. It's just when you're getting assists, somebody else has to put the ball in the back of the net. And we had a couple that hit the post and what have you. But her teammates did a great job finishing her feeds. It was exciting to watch. And then, unfortunately, her team lost the second game. She scored a couple of goals, had a couple of assists and whatever, playing great, having a good time. She's accepted at graduate school, so it's all worked out, and I'm very pleased about that. But I'm also very pleased to be back here. I took a couple days, got through a bunch of email, did a bunch of things I needed to do, tried to get caught up when I could, but also tried to get some rest. Some of you, when we had been talking about, hey, I'm going to take some time, were like, go see your kid, you know, we'll get by. But I like coming back recharged, and I am rested, I am ready, and we have a great show planned for you today. So it's Thursday, that means we start with the ETF of the week. After which, our big interview today is with Fred Vitese. Frederick Vitese is the author of The Essential Retirement Guide. It is a very interesting book because Mr. Vitese is an actuary, and he's written it from an actuary's standpoint. And actuaries come up with their numbers differently than financial advisors and financial services firms. And he draws the distinct conclusion that people don't need to save as much money as people think they need to save because of what they've been told they need to save. In fact, he's got a website that includes a way for you to calculate what the appropriate wealth target should be. And I'm sure we'll talk about that during the interview, but you can find a link for it at the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page and go do it. And you might be more pleased with what he tells you is the wealth target than what you've heard from others. At least if you haven't, you know, if you're playing catch up, if you haven't been saving quite to the level you should have been, because he believes that, you know, to some extent we're being sold a bill of goods. And I have to say, I don't disagree. I think we're being sold this idea that, like, hey, you're going to save enough money so that you can live off of it and never run out of money and not really dip into it. You know, you don't want to die. Dying broke is fine. Dying the day after you run out of money is not so good, because then you became a burden to somebody. I don't know that dying broke is so great. It means you get out without any bills and that's all fine. And you didn't become a burden to somebody, but you might not have been able to live your life out the way you wanted to because you were worried that, hey, I'm about to run out of money. So I like the idea of what he says. The interesting thing, we'll undoubtedly talk a little bit about insurance because he's not a big fan of certain types of insurance, which is odd coming from somebody who's an actuary. I think actuaries are sort of in the insurance business, but really they're not. They're in the business of telling insurers, here's what the probabilities are going to be. So that will be our big interview today. After that, collective wisdom from Hightower Global Investment Solutions. I know you're thinking, wait, that's not normally on Thursdays. No, it's not, but we're doing it today. And it's not even the normal collective wisdom. Why? Because Matthias Kuhlme, who it's always Matthias Kuhlme and the gang, well, it's just the gang today. Yeah, we don't have Matthias, which is not a bad thing. We love having Matthias on the show, but standing in for him today is Matt Harris, head of analytics and research at Hightower. And we've got Jimmy Hausberg from the Hausberg Group and Stephen Rosen from Hightower Bethesda. We'll be talking about their best sector ideas for the rest of the year. And then the Money Life Market Call. Christian Bertelsen from Avianz Capital in Talking Stocks. He's a value investor. Hasn't been on the show for a while, like about a year, which is way too long because he's a lot of fun. Always nice to get a chance to chat with. So that's our lineup for today. This is Money Life. So in case you've forgotten in the time I've been away, Money Life is independent personal finance talk. We are dedicated to looking smartly at a wide range of approaches and opinions on investing. It is not just what I like or believe in. It is anything I think that can help you learn about how experts see the market and help you decide how you feel about things. You may love what you hear from somebody. You may hate from what you hear from somebody else, but it helps you get the courage of your convictions. This is what I believe. This is what I want to do. This is why I want to do it. You need that courage because disagreement makes a market. And because we on this show talk to all different types of experts, you should never be surprised when somebody says, hey, buy this. And then somebody else comes on in short order and says, no, sell it. So we'll see if that happens. I almost always talk about that at the end of the show. So you always want to stick around to the very end. Follow us on Twitter. We're at Money Life Show. And if you want to know about my columns, I'm at MKTW Jaffe. My columns, of course, on MarketWatch.com, where I am senior columnist. Tell your friends about us. Use our website, MoneyLifeShow.com. And don't be shy about questions, comments, suggestions, and more. Chuck at MoneyLifeShow.com. So that's it. It's Chuck's back. Welcome back. It's St. Patrick's Day. Whatever. Do this before you hit the green beer. And I promise you'll have some fun. You'll learn a little something and you'll be better off for the journey. Thanks for joining me on Money Life. Again, our lineup. Tom Lydon to Frederick Vatese to the Hightower Gang. And then Christian Bertelsen from Avianz Capital. We'll get things rolling with the ETF of the week when Money Life picks up steam right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Tom Lydon's here now for the ETF of the week. Tom joins us each week to discuss an ETF that typically has gotten into the zone where you might want to buy it. Not always. Sometimes it's an ETF that is something you want to look for, you want to be putting on your radar screen, you want to be considering for later. Because at ETF Trends, well, they look at all things. They look at the positives and the negatives, but they also look at everything from soup to nuts. So if you want to learn more about investing in exchange-traded funds, check out ETFTrends.com. Tom is on Twitter at Tom Lydon, and the firm is on Twitter at ETF Trends. Tom Lydon, welcome back to Money Life.
Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be back.
Our ETF of the week is
the iShares Russell 2000 ETF, ticker symbol IWM.
The IWM, the iShares Russell 2000 ETF. Now, for those who are trying to do the math on Russell 2000, Russell 2000 is small cap. And if you look at the last couple of years, small caps, relative to large caps, have been pretty ugly. So why small caps now?
Well, maybe that's part of the point, Chuck. Small caps compared to large caps over the past three decades have drastically outperformed large caps. But as you point out, that hasn't been the case over the last couple of years. So with that in mind, and with the idea that everything always reverts back to the mean, it's something to think about. So as you have your portfolio, have you asked yourself lately, what portion of your portfolio is allocated to large cap, mid cap, small cap? It's really easy to do, and I encourage all the listeners to make sure that you do that on a regular basis to be sure you set your portfolio. With that in mind, so far in the last month, we've seen a bit of a change. The Russell 2000 is up over 11% just in the last 30 days compared to the S&P 500 that's only up 6%. Again, great numbers. We'll take them all day long. But the idea was right after the first of the year, pretty big corrections of markets across the board. But small cap area, the market has really been storming back. And with that, there are a lot of folks that are saying this might be the time when we see that reversion back to the mean.
So we like this and we kind of feel the timing is right. What about making sure you don't have a whole lot of overlap? Because if you've got widely diversified funds, you'd already have a small cap allocation. And if you have a small cap allocation, are you just rebalancing and putting your portfolio back on plan, or are you buying this fund to add to your small cap allocation for some specific reason?
Well, Chuck, you've seen the studies, and most people own mutual funds and don't own ETFs. More and more investors are actually dipping in and buying more ETFs. But if they were to go to Morningstar, plug in their portfolio, the correlation to large cap asset class would be about 90 to 95% on average for the average investor. The average investor doesn't think about mid cap or small cap allocations. And you know what? They haven't been hurt by that in the last couple of years. So that's absolutely fine. Use this as an advantage. Use this as, geez, if small caps are due to outperform large caps, be sure you go into your overall allocation and start to diversify a portion down to small cap. That doesn't mean that you've got to sell your complete portfolio, but if you've got five different mutual funds and you throw them into a Morningstar analysis and they say that the correlation is very tight, it doesn't hurt you to sell one of them to buy a small cap allocation like IWM. I think part of this is a discussion about ETFs, but really part of it is a discussion about diversification, Chuck, because the S&P 500 is not the only asset class out there. Mid-caps, small caps deserve a little bit of love, especially during times like this where they've underperformed.
In terms of this fund at this point, are we talking about 200-day moving average, and should that be the thing that determines whether folks are in or out?
Great point. We're a little premature in buying this ETF as far as going above its 200-day average. Right now, it's about 5% below. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Most people are not watching the general trends. If you do have money that's available and you're concerned about the markets in general, watch the trends, not just IWM or the Russell 2000. Watch the S&P 500. But if we actually get to a point where the Russell 2000 goes above its 200-day average, that's a good period of time or a good point, I would say, to start shifting a portion of your funds away from large cap into small cap just so you're well diversified. So right now, technically, as far as trend followers are concerned, there's not a buy signal. But we've seen a real improvement off the recent lows. And it is performing very well compared to the large cap market and the S&P 500.
Small cap is one area where a lot of folks say that's where active managers can really shine. In this case, of course, we're talking about a small cap index.
Right.
If somebody's got a small cap allocation and they've said, hey, I'm doing it with an active manager, is there any reason why you would say, you know, broaden it out and do that and split your money? Or would you say, look, if you've decided to be active, Yep, this is one case where, okay, it's the ETF of the week, but it's not the ETF for you.
Well, it's really easy. You know, Chuck, if you've got an actively managed small cap mutual fund and it's outperformed the Russell 2000 in the last 3 or 5 years, great, hold on to it. The issue is 80% have underperformed, and their expenses are higher, and they don't have the tax efficiency that ETFs have. So that's really something to think about. And more investors are holding their mutual fund portfolio managers accountable. So it's always worthwhile to go through that exercise, look at the performance versus the benchmarks, look at the tax efficiency, especially if in the last year your small cap mutual fund that was actively managed kicked off a capital gain distribution when it was actually down in 2015. And many of them did because they needed to sell low-cost basis stock in order to meet redemptions. That's not a great situation to be in.
Definitely not. So the situation you're looking to be in is the iShares Russell 2000 ETF, the IWM. Tom, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks, Chuck. Take care.
Tom Lydon is the editor at ETF Trends. It's ETFTrends.com, at ETF Trends on Twitter. Tom's on Twitter, at Tom Lydon. That's a great start to the Thursday edition of Money Life. The big interview is next, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hightower is a groundbreaking team of financial advisors committed to giving you access to best-in-class financial products and services, a practice often overlooked by brokers on Wall Street. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Let's face it, size matters.
Truly epic proportions.
Especially when it comes to your financial talk.
I have a plan.
Quick sound bites and rush chatter won't help you.
Blah, 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 blah.
You want more details, more depth.
Concentrate, focus power.
More to think about.
What do you think?
This is Money Life's Big Interview.
I think it's brilliant.
A meaningful conversation on money and markets.
This is why we're here.
So settle in.
I made you coffee.
You're going to be here a while.
It's big interview time here on Money Life, and well, there's not much subject matter that is bigger in terms of your life than your retirement. And I'm very pleased right now to be joined by Frederick Vatese. He is the author of The Essential Retirement Guide, which takes a contrary view to a lot of the things you know about retirement. Now, Frederick is chief actuary for Morneau Chappelle, which is a human resources consulting firm. If you want more information on the firm, it's MorneauChappelle.com. It's linked up at the MoneyLifeShow.com recent and upcoming guest page. But you should also follow Frederick at F. Vatese, which is V-E-T-T-E-S-E, at F. Vatese 1. Fred Vatese, welcome to Money Life.
Okay, good morning, Chuck.
You know, to me, the interesting part of the book is you draw some conclusions that I think are going to draw, going to make some members of the financial planning community just a little bit crazy. I don't think you set out necessarily to say, oh, I'm going to go off to be contrarian. I think you've just set out to take an approach that kind of says, you know, folks, it doesn't have to all be the same, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, what I've done is I've crunched the numbers, and wherever the numbers lead, I follow.
So let's talk about where they lead, because like I said, I think some of your conclusions, if I had to show it to some of the financial advisors we talk to occasionally, they would go, really? Because that's not the numbers that they've been crunching.
Okay. So for example, if you look at some of the very large financial institutions like Fidelity and Vanguard, and you see what they say is the retirement income target, that is the amount of retirement income you need as a percentage of your final pay. They'll say it's 75% roughly. Some will even say higher than 75%. In actual fact, for most people who are saving for retirement, that's the people with above average income. The real target is more like 50% of your final average pay. And so how do you get such a big discrepancy is the question. So I've looked at how they've done the numbers, and they've left out some very strange things and also made some pretty strange assumptions along the way. So one assumption they made is that you're only setting aside about 4% of your income for retirement. So that raises the question, how the heck do you get to a 75% final average income, retirement income from your nest egg if you're only putting aside 4% a year. So that's just an unrealistic number. And if people were putting aside more, then they would have a lower target because they're spending less during their lifetime. That's one example. And there's other things they've done as well where the numbers just don't add up. The other big thing is they've essentially ignored money that you're paying in every year towards your mortgage payments and child raising costs. And those are expenditures that the vast majority of Americans are facing year in and year out during their working lifetime. And that's why the actual fact is people end up living on about 35-40% of their gross income during their lifetimes when you look at just what they're spending on themselves versus their children or their house.
Does this explain how we get the disconnect? Because this is a much nicer explanation than the one I typically give. The one I typically give is that, hey, as a financial advisor and the advisory community, they want to make sure you don't run out of money because, A, the more money you're saving, the more they can make in fees and the more they can bring into themselves. And then, B, the more that they make sure that you never run out of money, the less likely they are to get sued because you're not running out of money. But we hear all of these dire predictions about Americans are not saving enough and people are not going to have enough money to live in retirement. But we are not necessarily getting more and more statements. I mean, when I was a kid, you used to hear about seniors as they were coming off of the pension system living on cat food. We don't hear those stories right now. We hear that Americans don't have enough, but we haven't gotten to crisis. Is this why we hear the people don't have enough, but then we don't have as many actual stories of people not having enough?
Well, that's right. In actual fact, some people are not saving enough, but it's not such a huge discrepancy. And one of the ways you can tell that is you look at surveys, which have been done by groups like the Society of Actuaries, and they survey people just before retirement. They call them pre-retirees, and then they also survey people after retirement. And so what you find is typically about 40% of people before retirement, the pre-retirees, are confident about their financial situation. And after retirement, it gets up to 60-65%. And if they paid off their mortgage, it gets up to about 75% are confident. What that's telling me is that they've been scared by all these stories about not saving enough. And so before retirement, they're in the dark. They don't know how much they really need. All they know is that their experts are telling them that they haven't saved enough. After retirement, they actually have some experience. They know what their expenditures are. They know what their money is, how fast they're drawing it down. And then they realize it's not as bad as they thought it was going to be.
One of the things that you talk about in the book is long-term care insurance. I typically look at long-term care insurance, and when I'm asked about it, I'm like, it's very situational. As I was reading your stuff, I thought, well, there's no situation here that it would be appropriate for. Is that too strong? Do you hate long-term care insurance as much as I think you do?
I don't like long-term care insurance the way it's constructed. Very basically, the problem with long-term care insurance, it's just the opposite of what you want from insurance. What you want from insurance is modest premiums, but if something happens, something catastrophic happens, you're covered. So, you know, you have house insurance. You want to pay modest premiums, but if your house burns down, then they're going to build you a new one. Long-term care insurance is just the opposite of that. The premiums are not modest. They're very significant. They might be $3,000 or $4,000 if you start early enough, and maybe as much as $12,000 a year. So they're very significant premiums. But the thing is, if something happens, you're not covered. They only cover first dollar, like they might pay you $1,200 a week during the time that you're in long-term care. But by the time you need it, your actual cost may be $2,000 or $3,000 a week. So it's not covering you. It's only covering first dollar, but you still are on the hook for those extra expenses. That's the main reason I don't like it. But there are all kinds of other reasons for it as well, which I enumerated in the book. One thing is, I looked at a typical example. Like typically, when do you think you're going to need long-term care insurance? It's going to be when you're 85, maybe you've got dementia at that point in time, and your children put you into a long-term care facility. So if that's what you're saving the insurance for, then you're wasting your time. I show an example in the book where if somebody, say, takes out the insurance in their mid-50s, paying them premiums religiously, and at age 85 this happens, and then they go into the long-term care facility, then the insurance will pay them so much per week, I call it $1,200 a week, during the time that they're in long-term care. Then I looked at, what about if they didn't put money into a long-term care insurance, but they put the same amount into a bank account or, you know, a savings account that was invested in stocks and bonds during that whole time, and they earned only 4% a year in interest. And I found that they would actually be farther ahead putting the money into that savings account than they would putting the money into long-term care insurance. So the weird thing is that even when they have a claim, they're actually still better off without the insurance.
Of course, that assumes a few things, that they wind up not needing to put in that claim until they reach their 80s, and that they have indeed saved the money, which we'd hope that they would save the money, but some people pay their bills better than they save money, which is a reason for insurance. And then there's that other side that says, well, if you don't have, say, late onset Alzheimer's, you might wind up with early or something along those lines. So I get it. Now, the other side of this was, you don't seem to love annuities, but you did talk about them in the book as actually being a pretty useful tool for people.
For sure. I mean, the thing that people are most concerned about when it comes to retirement is their health. That's number one. But number two is that they're going to outlive their money. So why wouldn't you go for a product that's going to guarantee that you'll never outlive your money? And that's what annuities are. They'll pay you if you die at 70 or if you die at 105. It doesn't matter. I mean, it'll keep on paying you for the rest of your life. Then you might say, yeah, but the amount you're getting paid is peanuts compared to how much you could draw as an income if you simply put the money into, say, a portfolio of stocks and bonds and drew that down every year. I actually found that that actually isn't the case. If you live long enough, you're actually going to get more income from an annuity than you're going to be getting from a portfolio of stocks and bonds. Bottom line was, the best scenario for anybody who's got a sizable nest egg is that they should be putting about one half of their money into an annuity, say by the time they're age 70, or even better, buying a deferred annuity, one that starts payments at age 80, but buying them early, say when they're age 60 or so, because the cost at that point would be pretty minimal. So you buy a deferred annuity that's going to cover your basic expenses from age 80 and on, and then all the rest of the money you can still invest the way you would normally invest it.
There's a couple of other things in the book that I really liked. One of the things that you really help people with is to calculate what you call their personal wealth target, the amount they need to retire comfortably. And you pointed out that the numbers are different for everybody. If you can give somebody an idea of how they determine what the right number is, because every calculator you're ever going to use is going to give you something different. How does somebody get comfortable with the number?
When I looked at it closely, I found there were like 20 or 25 different factors that affect what your wealth target is going to be. You can't just say, I'll need $100,000, I'll need $500,000, whatever it might be. For example, if you retired at age 58, you might need six times as much money as if you retired at age 70. So it goes to show how much the target can vary. But retirement age is only one of the factors. So rather than trying to put this all in tables or in words in the book, what I've done is I've created a very simple calculator of that wealth target, which is available on www.mornochappelle.com/wealth target. There's no charge for it. We don't record any information about emails or whatever, or follow up with anybody. It's just a freebie. But that, you have to fill in about 20 pieces of information, and it will actually spit out a target for you.
Our website has a link there as well to the Morneau Chappelle site and to the calculator. So folks can check that out. And of course, if they want more information, they should read the book. It's The Essential Retirement Guide, A Contrarian's Perspective Out from Wiley. Frederick Vatese, author of the book. Thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
Thank you.
Remember, if you want to learn more about what Fred Vatese is talking about, you want to follow him on Twitter. He's at FVatese1 on Twitter. We've got much more Money Life to go. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
When it comes to investing and managing money, there is no one right way.
Of course, people do go both ways.
Ultimately, you and your advisors will make shared decisions to determine the path you take.
It appears we share the same passions.
Welcome to Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions, where Hightower advisors look at key situations facing you and help you see how discussion and analysis can lead to ideal decisions. Yes, it's time to get smart and put our heads together. And make the best decision for your situation.
It's Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. A very interesting segment here on Money Life, because we're about to have a discussion with multiple advisors. Now, you could do that anytime you want. We don't do it often on the show. In fact, it's the only time we ever discuss things with more than one person at a time. But what's particularly interesting here is that if you went out and you grabbed a couple of different advisors from different firms, you might find disagreement or you might find different approaches. But we're talking with advisors from the same firm. What makes it unique is that Hightower doesn't force those advisors to conform to the house view. Instead, it works with experienced advisors, and they bring their experience to the table, but they also benefit from the collective and bouncing the ideas off of everybody else. If you want to learn more about how it works, go to HightowerAdvisors.com. They're on Twitter at Hightower, A-D-V-S-O-R. And Hightower is a sponsor of the show. Now, normally, we say that Matthias Coulmé is joining us, but he's actually away this week. You should still follow him at MoneyClip Blog. Stepping in this week to lead our discussion will be Matt Harris, head of analytics and research at Hightower, on Twitter at Matt Harris CMT. Joining him, Jimmy Hausberg, managing director and partner at the Hausberg Group in Los Angeles, and Stephen Rosen, managing director and partner at Hightower Bethesda, which is on Twitter at Hightower Beth SD. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. We're going to start with you today, Matt, filling in for Matthias. We want to know your best sector ideas for the rest of this year. What's the place where you're looking an industry segment and saying, here's where you can make some hay right now?
Perfect, Chuck. Thank you again for this opportunity. And as you mentioned in the intro, we always like to engage all of our partners and advisors in a dialogue with one another because we don't have that house view dictating, in this case, what sectors we do or do not like. In fact, all of our teams have the ability, interest, the skill set, and desire to do this on their own. And this is where we see the collective wisdom and collaboration that we think really differentiates us. But as it relates to our best sector or the segment of the market that I think is most interesting right now, most people think sectors and think equities. I'm actually going to shift this and talk about high yield, particularly as part of your risk asset segment, not necessarily traditional fixed income. And this may come as a little bit of a surprise because as we've talked about over the last couple of months, we're pretty concerned on other risk assets, but high yield is exhibiting some characteristics that we think are attractive and suggest that the recent gains over the last couple of weeks may continue. First, we've seen spreads contract meaningfully from levels that were almost recessionary. Historically, when high yield spreads were 825 basis points above treasury rates, we've always seen positive returns in high yield for the next 12 months. And in February, we saw spreads of over 830 basis points. Second, I see a continued era of higher volatility. In a challenging environment, high yield has opportunity for some gains when equities may just remain flat. If spreads contract to more normal levels, say 100 to 150 basis points lower than they are today, investors would see price appreciation of 4 to 6% and then a coupon somewhere around 6% annualized. So I don't think this is a bad return profile in a rather challenging environment.
I don't think so either, but it's a very interesting pick going in the direction of high yield when, as I asked the question, I was sort of expecting equities. So let's turn it over to Jimmy Hausberg and see where he's going. Jimmy, of course, from the Hausberg Group in Los Angeles. Again, best sector, most opportunity for the rest of the year.
Well, thank you, Chuck. It's a pleasure to be back on the show. I think I'm taking more of the contrarian view as to what might be the best sectors for the remainder of the year. And if you look back over the past, say, 12 months, the energy sector, basic materials have been hit the hardest, obviously based on oil prices coming down. So there are several sector funds, iShares, what have you, in the energy space, where you can pick up, to Matt's point, a pretty good yield, probably in the 3.25, 3.5 range, in a sector that's down something like 22% over the past 12 months. And in fact, the sector that I believe, and I don't have the exact numbers, is pretty much flat for the last 5 years. So talk about something that's underperformed. We know the reasons why, but there are real companies in that space, your Exxon, Chevron, Schlumberger's, you know, I don't want to go into each name. But with these stocks way down, these are solid companies whose dividends may not grow like they have in the past, but I think have started to move in anticipation of the fact that oil, which has moved up substantially in the last month or so, will probably settle in at some level in here, and I think you'll end up getting capital coming into this space. And also falls into the basic material sector as well, but not as much of a dividend play. So I would lean on the contrarian stuff. The second piece I would tell you is I think utilities, again, a yield play to Matt's point, and the telecom area seems interesting to me as well. Not as high a yield as the energy space, but in that 3%, 2.75 range, companies like T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, we don't need to discuss how many people are on their phones all day long, their smartphones, but those companies are raking in the dough, and I think you could see some dividend increases there. And again, a pretty conservative area to consider.
That brings us along to Stephen Rosen from Hightower Bethesda. Stephen, you have one of your partners looking at high yield as the area of opportunity, the next looking at energy, but then also some of the communications utility type stocks. What's going to be the sector that spins your fan right now?
Chuck, thanks for having me on again. And I think I'm going to have to probably go to one of my third favorite sectors, seeing that high yield and energy has already been taken by my two colleagues. We'll get a little broader in what we're looking at. We've recently reallocated part of our portfolio away from our large cap core position and structured a little bit more value orientation to the portfolio, both small cap and large cap. We think that when you take a look at those areas, they have been relatively beaten up over the course of the past year. We've seen some great outperformance from growth over the last several years. And as we're talking about, you know, whether it's going to be A, the next leg of the bull market, or B, a market that does retrace itself back into the 1800 level, we do think you're going to get some significant outperformance from the value side that will clearly encompass some of the energy plays that Jimmy is talking about, where we think there is definitely some great value there. We're not looking specifically in that area at the price of oil, but we do want to just have exposure. We do think a lot of things have been beaten up way worse than they need to be. So when we take a look at it, we think that will be a driving force of value, both in small cap and large cap names. But in general, we're trying to take a little bit more of a broader picture as we kind of equate what we're seeing here to kind of what we saw back in the early 2000s after some significant years of outperformance by growth.
Interesting stuff, because we have some agreement, but also a bunch of different ideas. Gentlemen, I'd like to have you back next week. We'll talk about what sectors you think people should be avoiding. So thanks so much for joining me on Money Life. Again, you've been listening to Collective Wisdom from Hightower's Global Investment Solutions. For more information on Hightower Advisors and to learn about the Hightower difference, go to HightowerAdvisors.com. Hightower's on Twitter at HightowerADVSOR. Again, my guests, Matt Harris, Head of Analytics and Research at Hightower, Jimmy Hausberg of the Hausberg Group, and Stephen Rosen of Hightower Bethesda. Matt's on Twitter at MattHarrisCMT. Stephen's on Twitter at HightowerBethSD. The Market Call is next. Christian Bertelsen from Avianz Capital will be here when Money Life comes back, right after this message.
Independent and advisor-owned, Hightower ensures that best-in-class financial product and service providers compete for your business every day, a groundbreaking model that's making waves on Wall Street. Discover what Hightower can do for you at HightowerAdvisors.com.
It's hard to know what to do next in the stock market.
Where am I? What am I doing here?
That's because one expert's rally is another's prelude to a correction.
Of course, people do go both ways.
One manager's buy is another man's sell.
Have you come to any conclusions yet?
Each day, the Money Life Market Call brings you a different expert's take on where to invest and what to avoid.
Now listen, Grapehead, I'll explain it so even you can understand it.
Just as important, you'll find out the reasons behind that thinking, and that should make your next financial decisions easier and smarter.
We do have a system, and it works.
It's the Money Life Market Call. Now.
The only reason we're here is to make catty observations and rude remarks. And there was nothing good on TV.
We're back on Money Life, and it's Money Life Market Call time, and you're in for a treat because my guest now is Christian Bertelsen, Chief Investment Officer at Avianz Capital Management in Florida. If you want more information on the firm and what they do, aviancecapital.com. It's been a while since I've had Chris on the show, but he's got a very well-articulated investment style that I know appeals to a lot of you in the audience. So I'm very pleased to say, Christian Bertelsen, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back, Chuck.
So let's talk about that well-articulated methodology, because until my audience hears it, buy, sells, or holds mean nothing. So how do you do what you do, and how are you doing it now?
Wonderful lead-in, and my feeling in one line is that discipline always trumps conviction. In other words, if you do not have a really set And it can be quantitative, it can be fundamentally oriented, it doesn't matter, discipline, then if you're just there trying to pick things in the breeze, you wind up with difficulty. And we are value-oriented managers. We certainly feel that the number one thing for us is risk control. And value means that, and I can say it simply, if I can show you an ideal stock, it would be at a 30% discount to the S&P in terms of price-earnings ratio. It would be cheap on a price-book basis. It would have a dividend yield that is more than the 10-year treasury and growing, and it would be something that has shown the characteristics of, I would call, low volatility in some of these troublesome markets that we've been in. That's the quick overall view. When you drill down into it, you will see that there's a lot of complicated areas we look at and cash flow, and we're very interested in the company's debt structure. Obviously, we think too much debt eliminates companies, even though you might think they're the greatest things going from a point of view of growth or even their value indicators. So overall, our philosophy, how we view ourselves as managers, is a value-oriented manager with a tight discipline, and out of that comes what we think are attractive names and attractive sectors that we will buy and include in our portfolios.
What has to change for you to decide to sell something?
What I'd like to see happen is, of course, stocks that are with us for 2, 3, 4 years or so, and that have a slow process of what I would consider to be appreciation, and a slow process where eventually they get to a point where their multiples are more than the market, where their yield, not because they don't raise a dividend, but because they go up in price, the yield falls, or hopefully not, a company that tries to leverage up too much, that usually results in a pretty immediate dismissal from them. That's what changes our mind about companies for the most part.
With the conditions that you are looking for, are you helped or hurt by the overall market conditions as a value guy when all the things that you listed are company specific? They are stock specific. So what's happening in the overall market? We could argue on the one hand, yeah, we're not top down, so it doesn't really matter. But at the same time, it's what presents the opportunities to you. So how much is it helping you or hurting you right now?
Well, I would say that it's certainly hurting us. I mean, when we do our screens, we look at things as whether they fall through and meet the parameters that I gave in a general way. And what I'm finding is that we're getting less and less names through the screens. I could tell you that in 2009, we had like 1,200 names, and now we're down to about 250 names. And some of these names just don't meet it because of size parameters or other idiosyncratic things to the stock. So the general overall market does have an impact, and what it means is that we lean more towards what I consider to be conservative, yield-oriented names, where we feel that there's a safety factor in buying them. When I say safety, there's no safety in safety stocks, but shall we say lower volatility characteristics.
So let's give a couple of examples. You know, what's a name or two that stands out that meets the criteria and why?
Sure. And since we're very much yield-oriented, and if you look at our base of investors of the $5 billion or so that we have, that's a big part of it. Verizon would be a good example. Verizon is an example, I think, of a company where 4 or 5 years from now, we know it's going to be in business, and it is yielding pretty close to 5%, so it makes our thresholds there. The balance sheet is very strong, and as far as their earnings are concerned and dividend growth, they continue to plod along. And as we use more and more in the way of data, and as you see more Apple and Samsung get sold, the pipeline and what actually carries the interface that we have is, of course, Verizon and AT&T. So Verizon would be an example of one. Another example, which I think makes a lot of sense to me, and people sometimes are surprised at it, is a company like Microsoft. Now, Microsoft, again, it's reasonably cheap. It has a pretty good yield, not quite as robust as the Verizons of the world, but it has some important characteristics, and that is that it's going through a transformational phase with a new CEO who's willing to make those changes that will be necessary to generate growth again. Microsoft went through a long period of time where they just rested on their Windows laurels, and now you'll see not only do they make our screens, but they are also going through a creative, destructive process, which I think is key for many American big companies to compete over the next 5 years.
Okay, so that gives us a couple of examples. I'm curious, when we talk about value, you get a lot of difference of opinion in one particular industry that we haven't discussed to this point, that being right now oil and the energy stocks. When you look at them and you talk about the characteristics, do they meet half the criteria because, well, hey, on price they've been beaten down, but they don't necessarily have the other stuff? Or do they meet enough criteria to be worth looking at, or not yet?
That's a great question. I think you really focus in on a point that I'm actually pretty bullish about, as long as you're willing to take more than a year scenario as far as your objectives are concerned. And I would say that the major energy names really are starting to be attractive to us. They were actually attractive, and we started buying them back in September when you had that huge drop down in energy, and we added to them a little bit in 2016. Let's pick the biggest of the bunch. Let's pick Exxon. Now, Exxon doesn't quite have as high a yield as maybe some of the other names in the space is concerned, but there's very little question on whether they're going to continue to maintain that dividend. So, you know, that's a plus. The Rock of Gibraltar balance sheet, that's another plus. As I said, we look hard at debt. And when you look at it from an earnings point of view, Exxon is going to be in a lot of different areas. It's going to be in, you're going to see it do well from a natural gas point of view. You're going to see it do well on the downstream side. So they've got a lot of things going for them rather than just something that's a pure crude oil dependent type company. And yes, that whole sector is attractive, but you have to be careful what you pick.
Okay, well, that gives us an idea of how it works. We've got enough time here. You know, you talked about what's going to make you move away from something. What's something that you had to move away from recently, and why?
I do not like retail in the U.S. I will make the following exceptions, I would say, other than, say, the discount-type malls. You know, I think that those outlet malls, I think those are one area. But other than that, I look at many of the retail names as being showrooms for Amazon. They, to me, we're watching the death of the American mall. We're seeing that people who used to hang around at the mall, teenagers and whatever, they can now go home, take a look at Netflix, get on Amazon Prime, and they don't, you know, it's no longer a meeting place. Now, a destination mall may have, you know, hotels and restaurants and other things, so there's some traffic through it. But by and large, I think retail is an area where I'd be very careful about for a while. We're going to have some winners out of it, companies that are able to both have a bricks and mortar as well as an internet outlet, like a Macy's, may eventually do pretty well. But I think a lot of areas when they said, oh, well, the whole holiday season wasn't well, I think you'll find that next quarter isn't this coming quarter that we're in now isn't very good either. So I would be very cautious about retail names.
Well, now we're going to find out if you're cautious or optimistic about some names that my audience is particularly interested in.
Play Hold It.
You got to know when to hold up
or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
Yes, it's Hold It or Fold It time with my guest, Chris Bertelsen, Chief Investment Officer at Avianz Capital Management. AviancCapital.com is the website to learn more about the firm, Chris, and what they do. Hold It or Fold It, send your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in to Chuck@MoneyLifeShow.com. Now, given the general themes that we got into, I have an idea that we're starting here with a softball. But Dave in Beaver Dams, New York, is going to get two requests. The first is for Chevron Corp. That's CVX.
CVX is certainly a buy as far as I'm concerned. CVX will be around here in 5 years. CVX has said they will do just about anything to maintain their dividend. You're getting about a 5% return here on the dividend alone. Eventually, we'll see stability in world oil prices. No one can tell you when, let's say a year from now. I think it's a definite buy. It has all the characteristics I like.
That's a buy on Chevron Corp, CVX. Dave and Beaver Dam's second request for Medtronic PLC. That's MDT. And by the way, he shared this request with Brian in Houston.
Well, you know, certainly I think that all of the medical device companies stand to profit as we get later in the year. And I think that you'll find the device tax disappears completely. I also feel that with the baby boomers and an aging population, you'll see increasing use of high-tech devices of all sorts, from pacemakers to knees to you name it. I think Medtronic's a buy.
So that's a buy on Medtronic, MDT. Now, I got a feeling we know where this one's going as well, because you talked about not liking retail. Dave in Vestal, New York, wants to know about Kohl's Corporation, KSS.
I have to go right back to the whole retail theme, and that is Amazon is just killing them in the business. The Kohl's of the world are like a showroom for Amazon. You come in, you see it, boom, boom, you get it at Amazon, and you get it cheaper. I think that Kohl's has got a hard road ahead of it. To me, it is a sell at this point.
I love that point about how the malls and the stores are a showroom for online. That's a point that I haven't really heard made extensively before, but I think about it from my own behavior. I happen to live, when I grew up, near a mall. My friends and I went and hung out at the mall, but I suspect if you had said, hey, hang out at the mall, but you want to buy something, I probably would have been buying it online, or can I get a better deal someplace?
And probably, sitting in the living room or downstairs in the basement, ordering up on Netflix what you'd like to see instead of just trying to crowd into a theater in the mall.
Yeah, probably true. So, again, a sell on Kohl's Corp, KSS. Next, Casey in Berryville, Virginia wants to know about International Business Machines. That's IBM.
I think IBM is a short sell. My rationale is that the big systems business is really falling apart. You can see it in everything from Amazon Cloud Services. You see it with all of the growth that we've seen totally in the cloud. And I don't care, you know, what area you look at, you'll see the migration to the cloud is absolutely underway in a very strong way. And IBM is very slow to adapt to this. They're losing major business. And I think that stabilization may come, but I think it's going to come 40 or 50 points lower than what it is now.
Wow, 40 or 50 points lower than it is now. From your standpoint, when you talk about making something a short, what makes you then cover?
Well, I think that, and believe me, I think the CEO is doing the best job they can. I think if they were to employ some creative destruction, start, you know, spinning off areas that aren't working, and perhaps, you know, buy a CRM or a Now or one of the big cloud providers, that would be a big change. Because they have the cash, so I'm not sure whether they will.
So that wasn't just a sell on IBM. That was sell it short on International Business Machines, IBM. And last, for Donald in San Mateo, California, it's Synaptics Incorporated, SYNA.
Well, I have to say that Synaptics is a terrific company. I think the CEO really wants to see this thing grow. I truly like it. It's one where I'm conflicted on. I have to give it a hold at this point. I don't think you want to really add more to the portfolio. It had great earnings last quarter. I think it'll deliver again this quarter. It's had a big run, but remember, it's a pretty volatile stock, and that whole technology area is suspect whenever you see people head for the door, even though Synaptics looks to me like they're a winner on the long term.
So a hold on Synaptics, S-Y-N-A. And while I wish we could hold on to Chris Bertelsen and talk stocks more, we've come to the end of our time. So, Chris, we'll just have to do this again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Chuck. I look forward to it.
Christian Bertelsen is the Chief Investment Officer at Aviance Capital Management. If you want more information, go to aviancecapital.com. Hey, we will cross the finish line on today's edition of Money Life in just a moment, so stick with us. We'll be right back.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors, Incorporated.
We're back on Money Life. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch. That was fun talking with Christian Bertelsen. Chris, very enjoyable to chat with. And let's talk about what's been interesting here. In the history of Money Life, there are not many guests who have ever come on to the Market Call and said they would be selling things short. Now, sometimes you get the guys like John Delvecchio and Brad Lammensdorf, who are short specialists, and they'll be doing it. But it's not that many folks who come on and say they're going to short stocks. And then when we get stocks that are being shorted, well, typically we don't get them talked about a whole lot. Well, here's the interesting thing. You just heard Chris Bertelsen short IBM. The last time that stock was discussed on this show, it was a short. Craig Hodges made it a short. And he did it a day after Vahan Janjigian had made it a buy, right? So this was just, I want to say about a month ago. This was just not particularly long ago. I guess it was in February. So 5 weeks ago, you had Janjigian saying buy it. You had Craig Hodges saying sell it and sell it short. Now you've had Chris Bertelsen come back and say sell it short. Very interesting. By the way, you also had talk about Chevron Corp in there, right? Chevron was a buy. Elliot Gu from Capitalist Times, Energy and Income Advisor, he said he liked it, but he was just getting close to where he would buy it when he was most recently on the show. So those are the two where we had some crossover. Tomorrow on this show, you're in for a treat. Bill Smead from the Smead Value Fund. He will join us tomorrow. So will Dan Zanger. So we've got big things planned. I hope you are planning to be here. It's great to be back. I want to thank my guests from today. Tom Lydon, Fred Vitese. Today, a slightly changed Hightower gang with Matt Harris leading the way in place of Matthias Kuhlme. And then, of course, Chris Bertelsen. I want to thank Rob Floyd, my producer, and I want to thank you for being here. All right, today's Money Life quote of the day comes from Dave Ramsey. He's not my favorite guy, but every now and again he does kind of crank out an okay quote. And this one I kind of like. He said, personal finance is about 80% behavior. It is only about 20% head knowledge. Yeah. But we want to get that knowledge into your head, and we hope you'll keep it in your head that until we do this again the next time, the best thing you can do for your money is to not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
This show is an informational service only. The information provided herein is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell securities of any kind, and not to be considered a recommendation to buy any stock, but an information resource to aid the investor in making an informed decision. All listeners should consult a qualified professional before trading in any security or pursuing any financial or tax strategy. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed as to its accuracy or completeness.